Dialogue on Air today.
Blog Talk Radio.
Explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome to Transformation Change Radio. I'm Dr. Kathy O'Bear with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Becky Martinez. This is our sixth or seventh radio show focused on understanding the dynamics of class and classism in organizations and dismantling. And we could not be more excited to have Dr. Alejandro Covarrubias, you know, Ale, who is actually our first guest. Becky reminded me that actually was born into a family system with more class privilege, more similar to me and all of our previous guests, but that was not their experience. So we're really hoping to really dig into sort of the dynamics of class privilege at the individual level, organizational level, what we can do to disrupt them. Some of y'all may know, I can't remember when we first met, but Social Justice Training Institute is how I have you kind of in my soul. And you've moved in to be full faculty with us, and so I get to live and work with you so many times. So the three of us will be at SJTI in just a couple weeks. I can't wait, with some other folk. And then I've known you in your executive directors and your co-director roles doing significant equity, inclusion, transformational change at colleges and universities. What I'm very excited about is your just expanding your work in full-time consulting with Foundations of Hope and Justice Consulting. Wanting people to both critique and create socially just systems. The other thing that struck me in your bio, which y'all can read on the website, but grounded in the power of critical hope. Whew. Dear friend, right. Dear colleague.
Yes, and I'm excited to be here. Ale and I were just together a few days ago, and we got into some like really in-depth conversations around class and our family and how it still shows up and the complexity of it. And what I appreciate about Ale, for folks to know, is that he very much pays also attention to intersections. And so as we think about how race and class shows up, how we think about class and gender show up, how we think about race, class, and gender, how they show up. And, you know, we know that it is not siloed identities, that they're important to pay attention to individually and collectively. And so thanks, Ale, for agreeing in a very long week that we've had. And so we like to start out, we have an array of questions, and the beauty that we have in this space is to we have some questions, and then it's an organic conversation, and one thing leads to another, and then by the next thing we know is that the hour is gone. So we want to start out with, so tell us a little bit about your class story.
Yeah, well, first, thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting because I just love any conversation with people that I love and our friends. So my class story, grew up middle class, and Meg, Becky, as you mentioned, the intersections of race, class, and gender for me are very, very like strong, and I would even add in religion. So grew up in a very Catholic home. Both of my parents went to college. Both went to Cal State Northridge. My dad was a lawyer for a long time, and then became a Superior Court judge. Is still currently serving as a judge in California. My mom had the privilege of being able to stay at home when we were younger, and then chose to work. And even some, my mom's narratives around work, particularly as she was getting closer to retirement, I would tease her because there was so much privilege in how she would advocate around class. And so one of the stories that my mom would often tell was she had a younger, which she deemed as a less experienced supervisor. And my mom was in her, among her office mates, was held the most class privilege. And she would often tell her supervisor, you need me more than I need this job. And so she could always leave, but then she could speak certain truth to that supervisor that her other colleagues couldn't. So even just watching my mom navigate class, and my mom was very clear, like my husband's a judge. I'm choosing to work in this space, but then using that as a form of advocacy to push back and create hopefully more equity among her coworkers. And for me, I've always lived in those examples and watching my parents navigate class space at the intersections of race. So one of my earliest memories of class was going over to one of my tia's house, so one of my aunts, and she lived in a sort of a townhouse community, and there was a community pool. And so we spent the day swimming, and my mom bought everyone lunch, and we had a great day. And as we were leaving, I just kind of said something like, next time, you buy the lunch and we'll have the pool. And my mom's like, as we're leaving, she's like, don't say things like that. Mm-hmm. And I had I think I was maybe 8 or 9 years old and didn't realize the impact that could have mm-hmm. on my tia and her family, right? And not because they didn't own that pool, it was a community pool. They may not have been able to always buy lunch for everybody. Like my mom was able to do that. But it was, in that moment, it was like hushing the class conversation. So it's that we're not allowed to talk about class necessarily in that space, even though growing up, it was always very clear to me that my close family, so my parents, my brother, my sister, and I, that we experienced class in a very different way than many of my extended family. Conversations about going to college was something that was always present in my life. Not only that I would go to college, but that that my college was going to be paid for. Mm-hmm. So my parents talked to me early on. I remember in kindergarten, there was conversations about, you're going to go to college. This is a part of your life. There was an expectation in a sense that I was to go to college. And then when I got into high school and started applying for universities, my parents sat me down and said, and it was really, I remember this coming from my dad very clearly. He said, we will pay for your undergraduate experience. And anything after that, we'll always pay for your books, but you have to pay the rest of it. So he's like, it doesn't matter so apply where you want. Don't worry about the money. We will figure it out. And I knew that was a big deal. I knew that was generous. So and at the time in my mind, it was a generous thing for my parents to do for me. As I've gotten older and had a deeper analysis around class, I realized the power that has given me in the world. Mm. I was able to buy a home in this last year and a half. Mm. I attribute part of being able to buy a home because I don't have student loans and I'm paying it off still. So that literally long-standing thing that I thought was just really generous for my parents actually set me up for the rest of my life. And even then, in buying my home, my parents were able to provide me additional money to put down for the down payment, right? So those elements of class, and again, eternally grateful for their generosity and knowing that there is such privilege in that they have that money, that there's a generational piece they can pass on, which to me is always fascinating because my parents didn't grow up middle class or grew up maybe lower middle class. So my grandpa, my dad's dad was a carpenter. He built homes and 9 kids in the family. So dad grew up very, he calls it frugal. He saves everything, pays a lot of attention to how much money he spends because of upbringing. But also my grandpa knew to buy land. So he wasn't always investing in his own home all the time, although they had a very nice home. He was investing in properties. So when he passed away, my grandma had been able to benefit from the rent. He built some apartment buildings that comes in, and then there's inheritance coming to the family after that because of what my grandpa did. Working with his hands, but also building generational wealth in many ways. You know, so I think I was able to benefit from all these things. I wasn't aware of that as a child. You know, it wasn't really a conversation that we had around how much money. I would often ask my dad, what do you do and how much do you make? And he's like, don't ask me that. Like, we don't talk about that. So money was, I never knew how much money we had or didn't have. But I knew that we could do things. Like, we were able to go to, like, Disneyland once a year. But then our vacations would be like, we're also going camping. So it was this mix of, but even the fact that we're able to go on a vacation was a thing. So that sort of middle class-ness was often kept invisible to me. I just knew we had more than some and less than others. And then as I moved into higher education spaces, and this is where the intersection of race, gender, and class comes into play for me, was it was always assumed that I was a first-generation college student. It was always assumed that I come from a working-class family. And so for me to dispel that quite often was uncomfortable because it felt like I no longer belong to that Latinx community. Because to be Latinx in higher education means you're a part of this working class community as well. So it made me feel connected and disconnected at those intersections of multiple identities. And having to learn how to be comfortable with, no, this is where I come from. This is my identity, and I'm still very much a brown man in the world as I navigate the world in a middle class, and really now an upper middle class existence.
Oh my goodness, there's so much there. As your dad or in your parents say, it didn't matter institutional type, go wherever you want. Right? It wasn't like you got to go to a Cal State or stay in state. And so thank you for sharing that. I think that's the first time that I've heard you name that. In your grandmother's house being nice, right? And how we have language that's associated with class in like really indirect ways. I'm curious to know for you, especially as you think of, especially as you share around the sometimes the tension or the assumption that folks hold, how does that like play out in, you know, in professional, right? In the academic settings or the settings you navigate that have education be a part of it?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting. As I work with students, there's sometimes disappointment that I'm not from a working class background. And I think, and this goes to this idea of representation that we want to like, cause I look like them, right? Particularly when I work with like brown and black students, like, oh, like you look like us, like physically you look like us. But I talk about my experience, like, oh wait, but you're not really like us.
Yeah.
You know, and actually the way that I love doing these things with both of you because then I get deeper into my own self-awareness. And so maybe the way that I've compensated in those spaces is that I will intentionally talk about being a second-generation college student.
Mm.
I talk about the ways in which I stand on the shoulders of my parents who paved the way for me, and I talk about how, like, and this is very authentic, so this is that I am committed to this work because of what my parents have given me. That I do want, like, I am an example of those that generate what generation set up in the future. Like, I am that future generation. And I am creating, and I do my best to create more access for others and mentor my cousins and support them in the ways that I can. But, yeah, so I think when I work with students, again, that idea of disappointment, you're not quite who we were hoping you would be. And then it's always fascinating when I work with faculty members or upper administration as I introduce myself. And once I say that my dad's a judge, everyone perks up.
Yeah.
There's this energy. And then this is where that class privilege comes in. It's like, oh, not only do you have a doctorate, not only are you now among the elite educated in the space, but you come from a lineage of smart people. Or you come from that you're generationally intelligent, deemed by our society. So I think there's something really fascinating about me or about that experience. And I always name my father and my mother because I'm so proud of them. I'm so proud to come from them and be in community with them and learn from them. And I've also seen my dad navigate class and be uncomfortable. Like my dad would much prefer to be in his backyard barbecuing and having a beer with his brothers or his sons and daughter and family than be at this really, you know, like what I would consider fancy function where he has to be, I mean, he wears a suit every day to work, but like to be in that like suit space, like he's just as comfortable in jeans and an old college t-shirt that we bring home that he's been wearing for 20 years. And I learned that from him. Like I would much rather be in community space than in the social like networking space.
I keep hearing white in my head. That's not necessarily, but I do wonder as a Latino male with class privilege, navigating mostly white people with class privilege in consulting, college, universities, just that intersection to me, and as you talked about your dad, because I, as you said, perked up, I was like, when white folks meet you and they realize, oh, doctorate, class privilege, then you're okay now. We can let you in. And so,
who is right?
What I love about you personally as well as in this conversation is the complexity of class privilege always balanced with the marginalization, oppression of race, and there might be others. If you don't mind sharing a bit more, either as you've been consulting, training, being inside organizations, what are some other examples of class privilege either you've gotten, but also what's been around you? Because I think not only as both of your parents, if I track that right, said don't talk about it, I was taught similarly, we don't talk about money, class, it's actually embarrassing, you don't, shameful to say how much money you make, even though we hold it as a badge of, oh, you're smart, you're better because you make more money, but there's still this invisibility. So I wonder if you could help me and our listeners kind of understand what are some of those dynamics of class privilege that we have to notice all the time.
Yeah. Well, even so I'm currently making this transition out of, you know, this higher ed professional space into being a consultant. And so this is the first time that I'm going to, what I would consider is own my own business, work for myself. The way that people talk to me about owning my business, it's very different than how I see people talk to my brother who owns a barbershop about mm-hmm. him owning his own business. So even the class piece around what is considered like, you know, this like high level consulting business versus owning a barbershop. Many of my cousins, like they're contractors. You know, many of my uncles, my godfather, my nuno has been a contractor for years. You know, my dad, before he was a judge, owned his own practice, right? So even just the conversations around which businesses, is that a hierarchy of which business is better? You know, who's making what is more profitable? You know, my brother makes a good living. My cousin as a contractor makes, you know, a hell of a living in what he's doing. But because I'm not laboring in the same way, I have a degree that backs up what I do. And my brother has a cosmetology degree. And like even what that degree means in the world. So for me, those are the class pieces around, you know, again, like, the American dream, owning a business, like that economic piece in which capitalism comes into all of this, that I'm seeing as this elite business, this higher end business, where my brother's barbershop may not be seen in the same way. And then thinking about, for me, that goes into then what can I charge? And I think about what is my services worth, what is my time worth, my experience, that I get to charge a certain hourly rate versus what my brother can charge for a haircut. And the skill set that my brother has, not only to cut hair, but to engage people in conversation. He mostly, being from Oxnard, mostly men of color, works with a lot of people. We have a military base that's really close. So a lot of people from the military come and get haircuts with him. And so my brother's talking about politics. He's talking about, you know, men talking about their kids and how they father. And so he's a therapist, he's a politician, he's community organizing, but he's not recognizing that in the same way. So people are like, I'm paying you for a haircut, when really they're paying for therapy, they're paying for some education. But can you charge that in that space? So even that just that juxtaposition of, you know, who's credible, who's knowledgeable. I think another piece around the, so that's kind of that big world piece. I think more specific to the consulting area is, and I'm learning this, that when I'm looking at working with an organization, it's framed around organizational development, that's seen as maybe more valuable, maybe more difficult than the equity and inclusion social justice work.
Mm-hmm.
The equity, inclusion, social justice work, you're not expected to get paid as much or charge as much. It's supposed to be hard work and it's meaningful to you. Or org development, that's just org development. It's just part of the organization, so we should just do it, which means you can charge more for that. So even what work within the consulting world, it seems more valuable. To me, it's fascinating.
That is fascinating. I never thought about it like that, so thank you for the distinctions in that. I'm curious to know how classes and, like, when organizations bring you in for either one, whether it is OD work or DE&I social justice work, how or if do they engage class?
I'm noticing that organizations issues are often rooted in class, but they code it as something else. Mm-hmm. So they code it through the lens of race if they're comfortable in doing that, or it's coded in communication. It's mm-hmm. coded in management styles. Right. So really, and this is something that I think, and Becky, as you and I talk, and I learned so much from you around class, like how we even communicate around leadership, how we communicate around the value of work. Like that's really what's embedded in a lot of issues that are happening within organizations. So I think it's many of the issues, again, are rooted in class. They're rooted in the intersections of race and class and gender in particular. But they're not coded as that because there's very little language, particularly on the organizational level, around class.
Yeah, I see it talked about it, hierarchy and rank.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about the significant difference in how your work is valued, your business to your brother. I mean, it's so powerful. It took me right back into, whether it's higher ed or nonprofits, that it's often the folks who answer the phone, that greet people who might be the advisors, who are very low paid, and yet they're doing that whole range, as you said, therapy,
mm-hmm.
sometimes whole person parenting, and yet they're told, you do such great work, we can't do without you, but not paid and recognized by rank, money, benefits, flexibility of schedule.
And sometimes not even invited into the professional development space. Whereas we talk about equity and inclusion, like they're still answering their phones. They're still at their desk. They might be running around supporting every logistical piece around it, but they don't actually get a benefit from that learning space that everyone else is. Right? And as we talk about, who is everyone else? Yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's where we so clearly saw essential, right, in COVID, as we think about essential. Like they did not get a day off. Grocery store workers or custodians on campus or, you know, facilities folks, they became this very, as Kathy, as you said, like distinguished, right, part of the organization, but their pay didn't change. They probably worked more than they may have even before because they were the only ones around. And what does essential really mean? right? Like, let's take the code out of essential and say, we need somebody on the front lines, and you're not going to get time off, right? You don't get to be safe at home working. We didn't say any of that.
And even today, as we're in this in the United States, this weird space between COVID is increasing in so many places, and yet people who are working directly with others in usually low-paid, low-status jobs are in still much higher risk of getting COVID or flu. And I didn't get that, Becky, till you just said that.
Yeah.
Classism.
Deep breath. I know that we have a couple of minutes before we're going to break. Any one minute zip, and then how can people connect with you, Ale, if they want to bring you in, have a conversation with you, contact you?
Yeah. So 1 minute zip.
We'll come back.
Okay. Yeah, I think one is classes everywhere. And, you know, so really, for me, it's been developing the lens and the language to talk about class, because it was intentionally made invisible for so long. And again, I think having folks like Becky and Kathy in my life where I can talk about it and work through the shame, because I think there's so much shame built into class. I think it's practice. It's just practice. Connecting with me, you can connect. So my consulting is Foundations for Hope and Justice Consulting. You can reach me at CobraRubiusConsulting.com, or you can reach out to me via email, which is AF, my last name, CobraRubius@gmail.com. And I will be at NCORE in Portland in a few weeks, doing a few different presentations there, working with some colleagues around supporting chief diversity officers and developing their competency. Another session with our dear colleague, Dr. Jarrell Brooks, really looking at expanding men of color's competency around emotional labor and how do we create space both for each other as men of color and for others. And then I'll be presenting on my dissertation around really providing white women the competencies and the skills to support men of color through supervision.
What does practice look like for you? Right, practicing individually, as groups, as organizations, because that's one of the things I think is important, is the action piece of it. So if you could talk with us a little bit about what does practice look like for you, and what would you advise folks?
Yeah, the gift of being in friendship with you, Becky, is that we practice a lot. Mm-hmm. I find myself practicing with you a lot because I know, one, that you have the lens for this work, and I trust you. And again, I think as we were going to break, I kind of named it a little bit. There's so much shame around class. And in fact, Becky, this earlier speaker was talking about this like that, and it's the shame across class identities. Similar to race, but a little bit different. So, I think regardless of your class identity, we're socialized around having shame to talk about money. How much money do you make? How much should I ask for a raise, or can I ask for a raise? So I think for me, practice is having someone in my life that I can talk to about it, and really begin to pick apart elements of my life around where class might show up. And again, one of the gifts of learning from Becky and others is, and this is, I think, a helpful bit of practice, is expanding my lens of class beyond money. That class is so much more than just, again, how much I make or how much I don't make, how much is in my bank account, what do I own or rent. Those are great and important pieces of awareness around class, but really getting into the values below some of those things, and doing some of the self-reflection around what are basic needs, what does everyone deserve to have access to, or with class. I think another really important practice that on the individual level is, and again, it goes back to conversations, as I'm engaging with friends, family members, just trying to be mindful of like the class conversations, like the assumptions that I'm making about what people have access to, what they can do or can't do, and bringing that into the conversation, like, hey, you know, would love to get together. Should we make dinner? Do you want to go out to dinner? Where should we go? What do you have capacity for? And doing that in a way that doesn't make anyone feel bad. I think for me, it's also being mindful of the assumptions that I make as I engage with people, particularly, again, this is kind of moving more into the org level, like the assumptions around what does your degree mean, your degree or title mean? Like, am I shifting how I show up with you based on your title, based on your degree? As I'm having conversations, again, in the consulting space, for me, what I'm really trying to get into better practice is, if I get to talk to a group of folks around the work, who's in that group? So I am paying attention to title. Is it everyone with doctorates? Is it everyone who are executive directors and above, or do we have folks across the organization who have valuable input to provide? So I think that's another piece around paying attention to the hierarchy that class creates. Are we assuming that you need to have a title to give insightful feedback in the process? So I think the practice is really paying attention to who do we attribute value to and who is invisible to us.
Yeah, thank you for those nuggets. One of the things I think, even as Kathy, you continue to do work on race, but when you did your show on race, and you know, we talk about race even here, is like have somebody that you can talk with and trust, that can be honest with and vulnerable with. And that's a really difficult thing often with class because, Ali, as you named, those feelings, right, the shame or embarrassment or guilt that's across the class spectrum, particularly on the bookends, and how do we bring things up? So an example is, so Ali and I were together, and I bought a lot of saltwater taffy the other day, and I told him the reason that I do this and why I go to different places, because I know that my family doesn't have that same ability to do that. And those are so small yet so significant. And how do those shelve in workplaces when we do conferencing, when we do travel, if we have to get sent out, right, to work with an organization somewhere, or how are those dynamics playing out? And how can we talk about them in like real ways that are still fun and still meaningful and hard? That for me is developing the capacity, because then your organization develops the capacity to engage in it.
And I could be wrong, so I'd like to float this idea. I find that folks in privilege by race, so white folks, if they can recognize the microaggressions, the racist, alien indignities, interpersonal, that opens their heart, and they're like, oh, I don't want to be a part of that. And then, ooh, I've done that. And then they might be willing to look at the racist attitudes underneath. So I wonder if something similar, that as we're doing practice in organizations to have people tell class stories, but then bring it into what are the dynamics that actually exist in our organization, those comments, those microaggressions, who's included. You're saying you have to have a title. I'm thinking custodian's a title, but it's not in the way that we think about title. And then have people be able to tell stories and examples, because what I worry about is folks in our privileged identities, our hearts aren't open. We don't care enough to stay in this for the long haul. We might go to a workshop. And so part of the practice might be, how do we help people who have class privilege by growing up, by current position, to care enough to understand why they need to be collectively leading dismantling classism? So whether it's the cost of classism to the organization, to themselves, to the people they care about. So,
yeah, and I think similar to the work around race, and Kathy, I've seen you do this with white folks, is helping white folks even tell their own race story, you know, and that, again, like, that goes back to the, like, learning the language, like being able to tell my own class story as someone who grew up in the very middle class and upper middle class as my parents moved and as I moved with them. And I think arguably there's a little bit more language around race right now in the world. Mm-hmm. I think language around class is still very limited, particularly for those in privilege. So I think that's part of the work. It's how do I, again, like, what, like, how do I even describe my class story? Because I think, and part of that is there's this myth that class is relative. That it's like, oh, like relative to the people that I grew up with, I'm middle class. Relative to, I don't have yachts, right? I don't have a mansion. I don't have multiple homes, so I'm not really that. So so I think around class, we use this sort of relative barometer to make ourselves, I have done that to make myself middle class, and to distance myself from the privilege that I actually hold. And I think that looks a little bit different than race. So I think helping folks, I know I've had to learn how to do that, like how do I situate myself in the privilege that I hold around class and not distance myself from like that ultra rich group and taking the time to reflect, I think this is where this question around, you know, what is the cost of classism? I think for many of us, class has been socialized into us in such a way that we're always aspiring to another level of class. Hmm. We're always, like, we've been taught to aspire to, like, this next level of wealth and capital so that we never truly embrace our own class experience. And so therefore, like, we're like, it keeps us from being authentic around class. Mm-hmm. And then it also, in many ways, we end up acting politically and around like liberation against our own interests, because we start to vote, we start to like politicize in a way that's setting us up for that next class step versus the one that we're in. Mm-hmm. Right. Because then so we don't actually address the system of oppression that is impacting our class identity. We've bought into the idea, like, we just gotta get to the next one and it'll be better. And there's such danger in that.
Yeah, such danger. A few things that come that popped for me, a bunch of things popped for me. So as you think, the reference group, right? So there's Lou's social class worldview model that talks about reference groups, that we don't, not until you see a different referent group than your own, do you know what's different. And so then you start referencing other class, right? And then this hierarchy can happen. And then Hearst, right, writes about people who grew up working class that shift their class, usually because of the academy, but not always. There's like three people, right? Like there's three different spaces in that. So that's the straddler, like I've identified in the show. There is then the loyalist. So folks who don't buy into this hierarchy, that don't buy into this, I need this middle class life, who stick to their working class values. Dr. Tori Savoda like writes on that, and that's really her life story, right? Like she's a professor. She's, you know, tenured faculty, but she goes back, like, outside of that, her class is very much working class. Like, that's who she's partnered with, that's who her friends are, that's who her family is, and so there isn't that taking on of, right? And so sometimes it can be a myth for some folks, not wanting to attain, but we have this assumption that that's what it is, and so how do we support those folks that are still in that space and want to continue to be in that space and within our organizations? And then I think about just this show, Kathy, in regards, so maybe to nuance it out is like who listens to podcasts besides in this, right? Like, and I would wonder even like who listens to these? Right, and where's the value at? And so when we think about this work, who has access, who has knowledge around, who has time, And like that's classed spaces.
Well, and Becky, like you and I were talking about this earlier this week too, like journals, like academic journals. So yeah, like unless you're employed by the university or as a student paying for the university, you have to pay to get access to this knowledge, right? It's a way in which the knowledge is created, disseminated, but also commodified, you know? And in a lot of ways, things like podcasts and this, these stratas of class, right? Like podcasts become open access spaces that knowledge can be shared. It's just like it's, I can put on, if I'm able to, my headphones on the bus as I'm going somewhere, right? Things like Spotify that are free, Google, like there's ways in which this information is accessible, right? But then how do you know to find it, right? So it might be there, but well, like how do I search for it? Does like, and so even just all those things, right? So I think it's so multi-layered around, you know, because we can call something accessible, but how accessible is it? You know, if it's just not within my realm to even know that it exists.
Right. And so that, for me, brings up the responsibility of leaders across class of origin, but currently upper middle, if not upper class, to have dismantling classism a part of the strategic agenda in the same way that dismantling racism and creating true equity inclusion is. And I do wonder if seeing how the structural changes around dismantling racism and building up capacity to recognize and engage and might be useful. And my guess is there could be places on campus where folks and other organizations experience marginalization by class can gather in that affinity space. What I wonder is, anybody ever heard of a privilege group? So like we do white accountability groups. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen an organization that is not doing this, oh, let us help you, but leaders, managers who are currently in class privileged positions doing your deep work so that you recognize how you perpetuate classism individually as well as climate, culture, policies, practices, and then what we need to do collaboratively with everyone to change? Have you seen anything close to that?
I haven't seen it.
Because we're doing it with white folk, and that's a lot of, so call to listeners. Could be a next step.
It could be. That would be interesting. Thanks, Kathy. I had never thought about that. I was like, how would I even run that? Like, what would be the structure? What would be the prompt? How do you create trust? How do you get out of shame and guilt? How do you give language? I know class action does work across class, but I don't think I've ever seen anything like that.
It would be fun to pilot something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Becky, like you had mentioned earlier this week too, like that you had been in a space that was more cross-class and the difficulty of holding that space. I don't know if you want to comment on that and like what that might be then to focus just on one group, one class group versus another.
Yeah. You know, I've been working with a campus that we did 5 sessions on class, and it was a variety of anybody from facilities to the titled director. And it is like, it was a struggle in that space, right? So when we talk about pay or access, we have folks with degrees that get paid well enough and have retirement and aren't laborers in the same physical way. And So I don't know. You're frozen on my end, but I'm going to continue talking.
You're good.
Okay. I think the folks where their class of origin and their current class was working class were like, we just want tangibles. We want to talk about it in more direct ways. And it's a hard space to hold because there has been it can be so very obvious in a hierarchical system, how it plays itself out. And so needing to work through, like giving language but skills to be able to talk about it. I think it's just it's a hard one, right? Because it is the directly haves and have-nots. And then there's the spectrum of what in that looks like and what that feels like and how that plays out and who has value and voice.
So then that has me thinking, right, like on the organizational level, like how class shapes what I think I need for my organization. Like then, like the needs of, you know, again, just different things, or and like, and I would have to think about that more, right? How is what I feel like I need as an executive director? How is that different than what I thought I needed as an assistant director? What I thought I needed as a graduate intern, and how class may have been part of the what I thought I just deserved in that role. You know, and the access that comes with those different positions. Because now I'm even thinking about the how I've negotiated job offers and job negotiations as I've moved up, mm-hmm. and the conversations around what I should ask for or what I could ask for at those different levels. And so it begins, and that sets the precedence for then how should I be treated for the rest of the time in this role at the institution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all the coded and unwritten rules about job negotiations. But those really, again, those set the foundations for what I should expect for the rest of my time within this organization. Do I even get to negotiate for a job salary?
Yeah.
Or am I told I should just be happy that I got this much?
Mm-hmm.
Or that I'm happy that I just got a job?
Yeah. The word deserve. Oh, sorry, go back.
No, I was going to say, we had Sanja on, Dr. Sanja Ardois, and she talked about that same thing, right? Like, how do organizations make transparent salary and just be really upfront with it so that there's even not the need to have the skill to negotiate? But, like, how do we create a system where that isn't have to, like, be upfront with this. Here's this, like, not even salary range, but here's the salary. Because people may not be skilled to know that they can even do that.
Hadn't been coached.
Right.
So part of this class capital is who got coached, mentored, networked, encouraged, who's assumed we're going to have to negotiate by class privilege, often race privilege, white privilege, and then who is treated with dismissal of how dare you. The other thing that comes to me is I was thinking the word deserve, and you said it, Ale, about someone with very little class privilege access, I don't deserve much more. I wonder when people shift from I don't deserve much to how dare you treat me that way. I deserve this. I deserve. And that sense of entitlement and I deserve more than I'm getting, I think is part of upper middle class elitist.
Whew. Yeah. Well, and to me, that goes back to the job negotiation piece because it's at a certain point, it's not just my salary. It's my clothes, stipend, my car stipend. You know, will I get a rent-free house for the 6 months at this level? All those, like, elements of privilege. I mean, that's true privilege, right? Not only are you going to pay my salary, but you're also going to give me a house as I'm in this position. And how that's different than as a resident director, and this is a very higher ed example, like we're paying for your room because you work here and you're going to live here and we need you to address crisis versus, no, we're just going to give you a house near campus, right? And that looks different across the hierarchy. We're not offering that to everyone. And at a certain point, again, that entitlement kicks in of like, so wait, you don't have a house for me? Like, why would I even entertain this job offer? My last three positions gave me that. You know, and so like to me, it's those elements that we really need to pay attention to, and that happens as you move up the hierarchy.
And you internalize it, right? Like there's all of this internalization. Mm-hmm. So Kathy, as I hear the, when do we switch from I'll take what I can get to I deserve. Like there's so much generational internalization, oppression or privilege that takes so much deep work to unlearn. because I can even show up in that, yeah, this is what I'm, this is my fee, but I'm willing to negotiate, and at least I get to do good work, and it's not as hard as where I have consultant colleagues who are like, nope, this is it for me. And my internal reaction is, are you serious? Yeah.
I know. You just got to, I don't know if it's a real insight, but there's something about white privilege that all white people have across, it's different across class, but there's something about class privilege, I wonder, that as you get into the senior leadership, it is so, so much privilege compared to a manager who's middle class. So new thought, I don't know, but it feels more individual that I'm going to hold on to what I got as opposed to, maybe it's me that I just see how I benefit from dismantling racism as a white person. I mean, in my soul, I see how I benefit. I don't know yet how to convince people with current class privilege and or from growing up what's in their self-interest to dismantle classism in the organization. Because that zero-sum game, if we really share resources equitably, that means leaders are going to be making less money and have less benefits. Maybe. It feels different somehow.
I think, and for me, particularly within a U.S. context, and I'm going to go heady because I'm a nerd, but like it's so wrapped up into capitalism, right? So the capitalist way we think, capitalism cuts across race differently, it cuts across gender. It's in some ways, systems of oppression are enacted through capitalism. Right, as we think about access to resources, opportunity, space, it's rooted in the way in which capitalism functions. So it's so much harder to understand how it may show up on the individual level. Again, it's the language piece that I think we really need, again, to figure out, because it is like it's, again, I have been so deeply socialized to not undo the system of capitalism. I've been socialized to buy into it and be a consumer of it and learn how to commodify everything that I do so that I can get paid more. And that the way that I undo classism is by achieving a higher class, by achieving more access. Like, to me, like, that's, like, as I've unpacked a lot, like, that's been the message of how do you solve this for myself. Learning how to undo that, it's really complicated. But I think about the environmental impact of capitalism. The human impact of classism is so painful and detrimental to our like physical, emotional, spiritual health.
And of course, we have to close as people are hearing that. Will you come back?
Absolutely.
Yes. So much more, Ale. We want to thank you for coming in the last 20 seconds, can you tell people how they can find you? Because I think you're going to be getting some emails and phone calls. So.
Yes, absolutely. You can reach me at coverubiusconsulting.com. My consulting is Foundations for Hope and Justice Consulting, and really hope that I get to come back and do some more conversation and continue to do good work in the world.
We hope today, as well as the other ones, have you inspired to recognize classism, to speak up more, to engage other people, to really create true equity in your organization's family systems. Dr. Becky Martinez, Dr. Kathy O'Bear, Transformation Change Radio, we will see you next month. Thank you all for joining.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the Sound. Well, on I-5 northbound just north of South 272nd Street, around mile post 147, a recent collision still blocking two right lanes. Current backup now is about 2-3 miles. Good thing no inter-responsive tow assistance and State Patrol have all arrived on the scene. They are taking care of that situation. That's I-5 northbound just north of South 272nd Street. That's right. Stay tuned because coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network and the Dr. Pat Show Talk Radio to Thrive By. And it's all about manifesting and rediscovering with Tiffany Watkins. Stay tuned.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. The worst inflation in 40 years is causing about a quarter of Americans to delay their retirement plans. According to a quarterly survey conducted by BMO and Ipsos, it's because Americans are putting away less in their savings account to cover other rising costs. They found 21% are putting away less in their retirement funds, while 36% have reduced their savings. A South Texas school district police chief is denying claims he's not talking with state police investigating a deadly school shooting. Uvalde Consolidated Independent School District Chief Pete Arredondo tells CNN he's in contact with the Department of Public Safety every day. DPS said yesterday that Arredondo, who is also a Uvalde City Council member, refuses to be interviewed on last week's killing of 19 Robb Elementary students and two teachers by a gunman. Police waited about an hour to confront the 18-year-old gunman, who was later killed by law enforcement. In an effort to address gun violence, one suggestion that is gaining steam is so-called red flag laws, which allow a judge to remove someone's firearms if they're deemed a threat. But lawyers say this will not help.
It's ex-wives trying to get revenge. That makes up the vast majority of red flag cases.
Richard Hayes represents gun owners in lawsuits. He says that requests to remove firearms are often rubber-stamped by judges who fear a backlash. President Biden is vowing to meet with members of Congress on new gun regulations as a way to address the Texas school shooting. The Dallas Cowboys and NFL Foundation are giving $400,000 in total to help the South Texas families affected by the Uvalde shooting. Team Executive Vice President Charlotte Jones says last week's attack on Robb Elementary broke everyone's heart, and she promised to keep victims in her thoughts and prayers. Half of the money will go to the Robb School Memorial Fund, while the other half will go to the Uvalde Strong Fund. President Biden is marking the 101st anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. That's when a white mob attacked and destroyed the city's Black Greenwood district of Black Wall Street. Between 150 and 300 black people were killed. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
In the wee hours of the night, when everyone else is fast asleep, you're the one on third shift, burning the midnight oil. When a part fails and everything comes to a grinding halt, regardless of what the clock on the wall says, you leap into action. Grainger is with you and all the ones who get it done. With 24/7 customer support by phone or click to chat. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your Alternative Talk weather outlook for Wednesday. A great start to the morning. Sunshine peeking through. However, the clouds will arrive later on today, with a chance of showers this evening. High temperatures, actually not bad though, look on the warm side, around 73, 74. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies, again with a slight chance of showers, lows back down to about 56. For Thursday and for Friday, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms, as well as the wind will be picking up, 10 to 15 miles per hour in selected areas out of the northwest. High temperatures in the upper 60s to low 70s, and low temperatures in the mid 50s. More rain arriving for the weekend.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you
and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are going to kick off this month, right? We're going to kick off this month with something that is so very important, so part of us, Manifest and Rediscovery with Tiffany Watkins. So stay tuned for that. But, Benny, let us just get really clear about what this day is and where we're going. This is Pride Month. Yeah, we're going to be doing a number of shows and a number of interviews, but it is extremely important to understand the meaning of this in today's world and where we are. And you're going to hear us talk about it. You're going to hear us talk about how decisions that are being made in the government of the United States of America go far beyond anything you think. How this little thing called Roe v. Wade, this is not a controversial statement, was based on privacy. So what happens when you take something that is based on privacy and you say it's no longer of value? Then what starts to happen is, wow, like what I do, like in my world, like how I show up, like maybe I'm somebody that wants to work with youth in the LGBTQ community, but I can't say things. So the question really is for today, as we take this month, and we're going to turn this month upside down right on its head, how can we in the world, whatever it is, wherever you are, wherever you've been, whatever you're battling, whatever you believe in, whatever you don't believe in, how do you get to manifest and rediscover? How do you do that? Because, see, I love this that Tiffany, I love what Tiffany's doing on this. Because if you just take those two words and you take all of the noise out of it, government, politics, I don't know, whatever it is, take it out. How do you do this? And why do you want to do this? And what is it about this that helps us understand that if you're on a pathway and you want to go forward, taking this pathway alone is one of the toughest things you can do. I know it. I did it for a lot of years in my life, and then I discovered how to ask for help. Today, I want you to meet somebody that's all about that. Mentor, educator, business consultant, over 25 years, former IT professional. I love that. Like, IT is like it. He's like an it professional. I love that. Working network system engineering, holds degrees in computer science, understands infrastructure. But you know what I love about Tiffany and I and our background? See, and we don't talk about this. We both have that systems mentality. Why is that so important in the world today? Because it is so cool to be able to look from the inside out. But beyond that, leader in leadership guidance, she has helped many people and businesses thrive. Don't you want that? Don't you want to have a vision and a dream for yourself, but don't you want to know how to do that? And so today, get ready to understand or learn more about what it means to keep a positive mindset, but also what does it mean to live with that? Tiffany, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be on. Thank you so much.
So I want to talk about the two words, manifest and rediscovery, for a moment, because I call it noise, for lack of a better word. I don't have a better word, right? I just know, like, blah, blah, blah goes on. It's like noise.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how manifest and rediscovery can transcend that noise from your perspective.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, for the record, noise is, I think, the best term. We have had the noisiest last few years, just filled with so much. And what I like to also think is of so little as well, because we've been filled with all this angst, and there's been so much social angst going on, and we truly have little progress from that. So I think when I say manifest and rediscover, in that system of noise, We have to manifest change. We have to manifest the things that we want to see. We have to rediscover how we go about making those changes. I think we think we know how those changes are to be made, but we've had little progress. And people are still feeling like the weight of the world is on their backs, and they still got kids, they still got work, they still got school. So I think rediscovering how to make the strides towards the change is the true manifestation that we're really looking for.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason that this is so important, and we're going to really dig deeper into this today, is because let me ask you this other follow-up question, and then we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back. Noise has been my greatest teacher when I discovered what it was and what its purpose was. Now, like the noise that I carried in my head for like 40 years or something, I didn't quite understand it. But there are tipping points in the noise. Now, I just mentioned one very benign to a lot of people idea. But it's a very important idea. And there's so much noise that we're not able to take in and rediscover or redirect what's really important to us because we don't have a good sifting mechanism. What's been your experience with this? For example, I did a survey about 6 or 8 months ago. Yes, Betty, I'm going to mention it again. I did a survey. I work with women and teens in addiction and recovery and a whole bunch of other areas. And there was a bill that hit the Senate floor, and our senator sponsored it, equal pay for women. It came in, and it went out like it was a flea on an elephant's butt.
Mm-hmm.
It failed. The argument was it will end up in frivolous lawsuits. Nobody screeched about it. You know, I asked, now I'm up to about 250 women, if they knew about it. Count on one hand the women that actually knew it came to the floor, it didn't pass, and it was frivolous for them to be equal pay. Now, the reason I bring it up, because you cannot manifest and rediscover if we are not what, Tiffany? Paying attention.
Paying attention. That's key.
Talk about, from your perspective, you work in leadership, you're a public speaker, you talk to other people. What have you discovered along the way to your life that has enabled you to move beyond the obstacles that may have shown up for you and to create, you know, Vanguard Media, to create your platform, to become a top coach? How did you move beyond, as I like to say, the crust to bring you right here now today?
Right. You know, I think, and I don't want to make it sound easy at all because it really wasn't. And also, I don't want to beat myself up and say that, you know, I tripped too many times. But I tripped just enough to realize that I had to listen differently. I love that you said how you heard the noise because that comes to us in many different ways. And I had to listen differently and prioritize the messages that came to me from what I was hearing. And we pull upon things that we've heard all of our lives. I call them the old tapes that are playing. They're just playing back there. They're in the background. Sometimes they're positive. It's all the good things that grandma said you could do. It's all the things that you got an award for. But then there's those other tapes that play that say that you weren't that good enough. You were maybe picked on, or maybe you didn't get the support at home that you needed. And those things play around, and somehow those become a priority. It's just human nature. We want to doubt ourselves. And those messages that I was hearing from the noise were having me doubt me. So I was just going through life, overachieving, trying my hardest to get this. Got to get this degree, going to get 2 more. Got certified in this, going to get 3 more certifications. Right? I'm just going to keep building on all of that because I'm going to prove those dates wrong. Those are not right. I can do this. And I had to, on one of my stumbles, I had to realize that I'm listening to the wrong thing. I'm prioritizing negativity when there's positivity playing right in the background if I just listen. And hearing that, oh, you won an award for this. Oh, you did such a wonderful job. It's like, oh, hey, you know what? I do feel good about this. I'm not an imposter. I can get this done. And that was truly transformative for me. And I just didn't look back.
Yeah. I love that we're talking about this, because when we come back from break, we're going to take this on. You know, I shared this the other day on air, I think, and I can't remember in what context, but I was like you. You know, the minute I had the opportunity, I went back to school. I kept going back to school. I didn't even know what I was going back to school for, but I did. I now know why I went back to school. I mean, it had such a different purpose. It had a higher purpose than I even knew. However, there's one thing that I learned when I stepped into this venture, and we're going to talk about it when we come back, because you nailed it. You know, there's that line from Doom where it says, fear is the mind killer. So what I added on is this: fear is the mind killer and doubt is the dream killer. When we come back, we're going to talk with Tiffany Watkins about how do you move beyond the big D. That is the D that fuels and feeds imposter syndrome. I mean, you all know what I'm talking about, right? It does. You don't have to have a degree to know what I'm talking about. I mean, think about it. How many of you are moms and you've thought, oh my gosh, you just don't have what it takes to raise this child? Seriously, it creeps in. How many of you think, oh my gosh, I'm going to go start this workout program. Oh, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can lift the break. I'll never be. I mean, oh my goodness, I could go on. But when we come back, we're going to talk about not only what Tiffany has created, but the invitation she has for all of us to step in, get some tools, get ourselves educated and informed. And I got a text message from one of our listeners. No, I am not going to run for government Congress seat. That ship has sailed. Thank you for asking me. Honestly, I don't have the discipline to keep my mouth shut. That's the problem with me. Let's take a short break. When we come back, manifest. We're going to work on that word, manifest. Benny, let's take a short break. We'll be right back, everybody.
Are you passionate about impacting social change or working towards anti-racism as a society? Are you willing to deconstruct your innermost thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about racism? Then Inflection Point Podcast, Cultivating Change from the Inside Out, is the show for you. Join Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter in open, honest, and deliberate conversations every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Does your life often feel like an emotional tsunami where rogue waves crash down on you, leaving you feeling hopeless and wondering if it will ever end? Do you wish to awaken the dormant strength inside of you? Imagine what it would be like to turn your pain into purpose. Start today by scheduling a complimentary consultation with Martinet. Dive into your healing journey and begin to see your life in a new light. Visit martineemmons.com and make your appointment today.
Do you have traits of ADD or ADHD? It can be hard to meet society's expectations of productivity when traditional approaches to time management and organization don't work for your unique brain. You need customized strategies. In the ADHD Self-Mastery Podcast with Bonnie Mengku, you get concise, actionable solutions to help you modify your approach and achieve your goals. Learn more about Bonnie at thrivewithADD.com.
Hi, everyone. This is Courtney Cottrell, host of Unapologetically Favorite on Transformation Talk Radio, here to give you some tips on how you can move your life forward if you're feeling stuck by using the GROW model. First, use the letter G to write down the goal that you ultimately want to achieve, whether it's working out 1 hour a day or working towards a promotion at work. Second, using the letter R, think realistically about the roadblock that is currently holding you back from accomplishing your goals. Third, use the letter O. Think about the options or opportunities that will help you in achieving your goal. What can you change in your daily routine that will help you move closer to achieving your goals? Fourth, Use the letter W to discover your will and make a true commitment to achieving your goal by writing down a completion date. Once you've reached your goal, celebrate your accomplishment. You are capable of achieving anything you set your mind to. Never give up and keep being unapologetically you.
We figured by the time we turned 50, we kind of had life figured out, but we were not prepared for the realities of midlife. Tune into And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife, with me, Susan Dolce.
And me, Leon Dyer, every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You're not alone in these challenges, and sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Find us at SusanDolce.com
and LeonDyer.com.
Yeah, I'm just saying, go ahead and tell Rihanna that equal pay is frivolous. Miss Rihanna Billionaire, I'm so proud of you. Thank you so much for paving the way for those of us that didn't believe. My guest today, Tiffany Watkins, is totally understanding the dynamics of what we're talking about today. And I just want everybody to be clear what we are talking about today. Manifest and rediscover. Can you all hold on to that, manifest and rediscover? I want to do this for all of you out there. I want to open up the phone lines, because if you're in a place where you just do not believe you can manifest, and what do I mean by that? I mean by, yeah, you kind of think about it, you kind of believe it, but it's not showing up in your life, you see? So you think you're holding it, but it's just like the stuff's not showing up in your life, right? It's like you're picking a Rolling Stones song and Sympathy for the Devil plays. It's like, okay, I love that song. I'm just crazy. But how do you manifest and rediscover, and why are these important? Tiffany, before we really break manifest down, how do people find out about you? And can you tell people about the Vanguard movement?
Certainly. Let's start there. I start with the Vanguard movement. It's a hashtag that's going around, and it belongs to me. It is Join the Vanguard Movement. And what that is a push for solidarity and women forward in the workplace and in business for women who have dived into the cannabis industry. It is the world's most broad industry right now, and just like every other industry, women are taking a back seat.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%. And I developed Vanguard as a platform, a media platform for women to showcase the things that they do and to tell their stories. And what this over time has turned into is an archive of the good, the bad, and the ugly of what's going on with women in this industry.
Yep.
Whether it's poor actors, male, poor actors, female, or just a system that is stacked against certain people.
Yep.
And so it's really grown leaps and bounds. There's a magazine attached to it, the Vanguard Media Online magazine, which you can find by going to vanguardmediaonline.com. And I urge everyone to read, even if you're not in the cannabis space, just to know some of the things, the positive things that are going on, and some of the same, you know, old things that have always happened are also going on in this space. It's just like any other space. But we really champion women and their position, and we want to see the gap close. We want to see equality for persons of color and women in this space. We have a solid chance to get it done.
And I want to talk, may I make a statement for a minute? Because I want to just talk to your point. And what I want to talk to your point about is this fact. Now, in my state, the state of Washington, we were way out front with the movement. We were way out front. And there was a reason we were. And I want to just drop it in there and connect this to what we're talking about, manifest and rediscover. Many people do not know that the people behind the, and I'm going to start with medical marijuana, because that's what started here in this state like over a decade ago, okay, the fight. Many people do not know this. No big journal article on it. The movement that started underneath the movement was women, group of naturopaths, women, moms, who had children,
that could not be treated by conventional methods for autism, you know where I'm going, right?
Mm-hmm.
For cancer, for MS, right? So the movement started with a whisper. And yet, we just do not talk about these pioneers that stepped out in front. And they fought the fight. I mean, they fought the battle. And because they fought that battle, and some of them presented the science, and some of them, right? We have to remember our heroes. And isn't that what you're doing?
Absolutely. And you're 100% right. This movement began there. And when people talk about cannabis, we make sure that we are saying this as much as we can, that the women warriors who had to go on the run with their children because they chose a different path for medicine for them, we stand upon the pathway that they carved in with sweat, tears, and whatever they could pack on their back. So we definitely pay homage to and showcase that too. We've published several stories on women who have done just that and are continuing to do that to this very day. Organizations being built. There's some in Florida that we have done great stories on that are groups of women who are just like, we will treat our children with what we feel is necessary for their bodies. And if this is our choice, we won't be held accountable for doing something wrong. We're good moms. And yeah, we definitely champion that. And that is a lot of the, and the other part of the movement that no one talks about is the LGBTQ movement, the back of our community that had to fight just to have the freedom to choose a treatment that gave them quality of life when quantity of life was not guaranteed.
Thank you. Thank you. And you see, that's why I love what you're doing. Because we have to start to call things movements now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really looking at myself again. I mean, what did you rediscover? I'm in a place now where, you know, the expansion of our network behind me, you see the channels we're going to have all in place by January. And I'm starting to think, have I been enough in the world? Great to create a network, but it's now time to do things differently, right? So we get to rediscover. But one of the things I love about what you've done, and you know, hello, let's call this, this is called the grass ceiling, right? These are women, we are talking about, we got to break a grass ceiling. And you and others are fighting the good fight. But come on, let's talk about a rediscovery. Why is it in the United States, if you live in Washington, right, for example, well, if you're in Washington State, been more liberal about it than a lot. I mean, honestly, we came out of the gate with Christine Gregoire, our governor, put it on the ballot, like, I don't even know when. But why, if you go to another state, are we going to find young men and women in prison? And might I say, mostly young men and women of color in prison for something that is illegal in that state, and not illegal in my state. So where do we get the rediscovery of what's right here for this movement? What's your thought?
Well, my thought is that it really comes, with the people. People have to understand. There has been a stigma built about cannabis and cannabis therapies for over 100 years. We have had direct fear associated with a plant. And so if we think logically, well, if it's a product that you can go to a store and purchase now, why are there people sitting in prison? Well, it's because fear still rules everything, and money still rules everything. And there's big business in prison. And I want to
privatize business now all of a sudden, right? That's like crazy. Right. Privatized business. Doesn't that sound like something from, like, the year 3000 in some futuristic movie? But you're right about it. I mean, you know, people, my mom used to say the buck stops here. And I say, no, Mom, the buck stops at the buck. That's the world we're living in now. You know, when the buck stops here, she's talking about the dollars. No, the buck doesn't stop here. The buck stops at the buck because people are trying to, like, oh, that's not enough money. Oh, I can't get enough of that. I can't do this. I can't do that. Now, let's talk about Manifest and Rediscovery, because Manifest has been one of these tricky words that we're going to talk about more when we come back from break. Because what we leave out of the manifestation equation is all the good things we can do in the world, right? You know, so there is this notion of manifestation and greed. But we're not talking about that. You see, manifest a dream. Manifest your lifestyle. Manifest helping others. Manifest how to create a movement. Manifest, manifest, manifest. And I want to talk with you about how you did that. What you had to rediscover, I bet it's a lot too. We'll take a little longer break so we don't have to break later. I want to know, what did Tiffany have to rediscover about herself to become the movement maven for something so incredibly important to helping others, women, how to create something that's going to uplift people that maybe can't lift themselves up right now themselves? See, if we're not going to reach a handout, Tiffany, I don't know how many people put a hand out to you to help you. I've had more people put hands out to me. I have more women mentors than I can imagine. Without them, I wouldn't be here. When we come back, we're going to talk about manifest and the movement. Tiffany Watkins, everybody, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Dr. Diane Show, where we explore revolutionary expansion of mind, body, and soul every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I bring over 20 years of expertise as a mindset warrior, perspective shifter, and unshakable optimist dedicated to helping you reach your wildest dreams in business, health, performance, and relationships. Join the discussion on the show. Learn more about me, Dr. Diane, and receive a free digital copy of my magazine at naturalnutmeg.com.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country and is just amazing. Dot of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. Have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
What if you could enter a sacred vortex of love and beauty, infused with the power of the earth and ascended masters?
Join myself, Dr. Georgia Herrera and Dr. Sharon Martin, in the Sacred Magic Show.
Bring in the mystical and sacred for healing, airing every third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You too can have your health and life challenges melt away.
Join now and feel your heart open up to the answers to your most important questions.
There isn't a magic pill to creating your healthy lifestyle, yet it doesn't have to be hard or feel impossible. Health works from the inside out, connecting both your body and your mind. Georgette LePage lives and breathes what she teaches, so allow her to be living proof of what can work for you. Connect with her now for a free 30-minute discovery session to see what results you are looking for and how she can help you get them. Visit GeorgetteLePage.com.
To awaken your magic within, reveal unconscious systems to discover your unstoppable freedom power. Join me, Tracy Lynn Wallace, on TransformationTalkRadio.com the first Tuesday of each month, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, to gain insight, direction, and tools to uncover limiting beliefs. Get ready to step into your unstoppable power to discover and uncover your magic within.
Hi, I'm Coach Martez.
And I'm licensed therapist with Drina Layton.
We want to invite you to join us on the Coach Martez and with Drina Layton show, where we discuss understanding love, accepting truth, and changing your perspective.
Relationships are the currency to life, and so many couples find themselves broke in their relationships. We want you to join us for a lively discussion and practical tips and insight on how to turn things around and gain the Married for Life mindset.
I will see if I let go somehow. To be here in this moment is all that I ask in the heart.
Thank you for that, Olivia. Hey, everybody, welcome back. Manifest and Rediscover with Tiffany Watkins joining me here today. I want everybody to... We're talking about the Vanguard movement. We're also going to talk about, you know, what does it mean to create a movement, but to also be an incredible coach, a mentor, an educator. And we're going to talk about that now, because how do you keep a positive mindset? How do you manifest things in your life? Tiffany, can you give people the websites? There are several of them, so people can take a look at how to connect with you.
Absolutely. To connect with me, go to www.lccoachingsuccess.com, and there you'll see the programs that I offer and a little bit about me. You can also find more about the Vanguard movement at www.vanguardmediaonline.com.
Mm-hmm. And also, when you go there, you're going to be able to take a look at, you know, we're not just, you know, Tiffany's not just talking about manifest. She teaches how to manifest your success. There's a master class on that. There's VIP mentoring when you go there. There's a 15-minute call. There's a lot. And, you know, one of the things that we're talking about today is how do you go from wherever you are to where you want to be? And I think that's part of the conversation today, just in the fact that I can give out two websites for you. Both of them are movements in themselves. Both of them really reach beyond the ordinary and tap into some multi-layered aspects of situations in the world. And I want to ask you, how did you get it? How did you get the idea that you could manifest what you want and then help other people? You know, I always look at what personal things go on in people's lives, like I know, like what I had to overcome. But the strength and power for how you show up in the world, you have had to break through a few things. I don't know. I'm just saying. You can tell me if I'm off on that.
You know, I did have to break through a few things. It is not easy being a woman in tech. It is not easy being a young woman studying tech. So, you know, and during that time period, there wasn't a lot of support community-wise for, you know, the path that I was taking both in my career and in my social activities. I really championed and advocated for the LGBT community, for safe sex, for abstinence, and for cannabis. So all those things wrapped together, there was a bit of adversity there. There was always something to fight and push against. But it wasn't really that, I wouldn't say that is my catalyst for what I do, you know, or for the reason that I, how I discovered that I could manifest things in my life. I think really what it was, you know, when we started this conversation, I talked about that imposter syndrome. I talked about how it is that we have these old messages, these old tapes playing in our head that tell us many things, but we don't prioritize them properly, so we give ourselves the wrong message from our own internal speak. I had to begin to listen to myself differently. It didn't matter how many people I helped. It didn't matter how many picket signs I held. It didn't matter how much I excelled in class. I still would go, well, I must do more. I need to do more. Why wasn't it enough? And some of that discovery came from talking with other women, seeing that they felt the same way, solidarity and community.
Yeah.
And a lot of it came from seeking out mentors myself. At the time, most of the mentors in college were male. You find someone in the neighborhood, and I needed another perspective. I needed to understand why internally I felt like even though I excel, even though I'm top of the class, why am I not enough? And I found that I was enough, that I was telling myself that I wasn't enough because I was just listening to every failure I'd had. and leaving the positivity of the wins behind. And those came to me through the mentor-mentee relationship, which I honor to this very day, not just as myself as a mentor. I always have people in my circle who I can go to for a multitude of different things. It was very helpful. Now, to start these movements that I started comes from 30-plus years of activism and picket sign holding and learning that if you want change, you have to not just be the change. That's such a T-shirt-worthy phrase, but it doesn't do a whole lot. You have to be a part of the change. That means you have to walk the walk as well as talk the talk, and you have to do the hard stuff, and you have to go out there and act within civil disobedience to get things done. And that tenacity I was able to find in many different corners, and talking with people about their experiences brought me a lot of stories. It created safe spaces for women to start sharing about their cannabis journeys. And that is rather how Vanguard was born, of women's stories and these small community talks that I used to hold so that we could all just share opposing views or views that championed the product. And from that, I was, these are all tied in together for me. From that, I was able to help people. I do one-on-one. Well, I'll come over to your house. Let's talk about this. And I realized that there was value not only in sharing, but in capturing, giving people a soundboard. Manifesting really is just discovering, putting things in place, recognizing that it's in the here and now, and how do I grab it? So I think I started developing those years ago while I was still on my journey. And that was, you know, one of the ways that I fell and then got back up again. Every time you get up, on a side note, every time you get up, you bring a little something with you. And, yeah, that's how it began.
You know, I think about this, and I want to just get everybody, you know, I'm looking at you as a cannabis activist, grassroots campaigning over 30 years ago. And I'm thinking about this from a lot of different perspectives. I mean, I have to really talk to the fact that those are words, but those words are backed up by sweat, by tears. And I love that we're talking about action, because tweeting a message about something you care about is lost. Getting a sign and walking in front of your senators or somebody's office or whoever it is you want to hold your sign up for, that is action. And I fear we are losing the art of that voice. Now, I'm a little bit older than you, and I come from a generation where we didn't have a tweet, right? We had people on a microphone standing in front of some municipal building. We had marching. We had Stonewall. Crazy as that is, that was an interesting event which doesn't get told adequately. We had the gay rights movement for men dying. And, you know, how did you get that? Look, it doesn't matter what side you're on. You believe in LGBTQ or you don't. To watch men die the way they died and women die the way they died and the mayor of New York City be like nothing, that's when you get on Ed Koch's steps and you say no mas. How do we bring the fight back? Because in this industry of cannabis, you know this, but maybe our listeners don't. You ever see a conversation between a woman wanting to start a cannabis company in front of a banker? You want to be a fly on the wall with that? You want to take into consideration all the judgment? And, I mean, honestly, can you even imagine, right, two people in a bank? Maybe the banker's a man or woman, you don't know. But a woman walking in with the business plan, with everything, saying, I want to work in this industry, I believe in it. Thinking, I'm going to get funding for it.
It's difficult. It really is.
But that's what you're here to help people with, right? Because
If you don't know what you don't know, this is not an arena you want to step in a pothole, is it? What do you think the greatest challenge is for women in this industry from where you sit now?
Truthfully, it's the same as any other industry. It's being taken seriously and being given a chance to have success in an equal and even playing field. It's really just the same. There's not much difference in cannabis, which is why I don't keep everything that I do cannabis specific, because it is a people issue. It just is visible in cannabis because it's something new and everybody's kind of looking at it and it's becoming more and more mainstream. But this is a people issue. This is an issue of sexism, racism, all the isms. It's here and it's present and it's loud because everyone's talking about it right now. And I'm hoping, what I'm doing is hoping that I can dovetail right into the core of what we need to work on just as people. You know, when women want to get funding for their business in general, why is it that there's such a difference with your business plan when you walk in it, but if you put it in the hands of a man and he walks in and does his pitch, it's welcomed. It's taken more seriously. I have had women come to me and say they have been sexually harassed during a meeting to serve a pitch for funding for their company.
Yep.
They've been propositioned.
Yep.
Quid pro quo.
Yep.
And that, and we need to understand on a human level why people believe that that is acceptable to do to another human. So I think that more than just being industry specific, this is really how do we as women, as people, look inside and see that we need to do better. But I think in order for us to do better, we have to feel better. And for us to feel better, we're going to have to rediscover, and actually really, I'll start here, discover what has made us foul and then rediscover how to bring the light.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much, you know, what I help people along the way with is rediscovering the light inside that helps them to do better and be better.
You got to discover the light, because let's talk about this. It really ties into manifest and discover. You know, what is the expression, bad things happen to good people? Well, I don't know where that came from, but bad things happen to everybody. Good people, bad people, it doesn't matter. But when you define your life as those things and you don't let the light shine through, then the laws of the universe, as far as my experience is, I will get more of that. I will get more of the ugly than I could even imagine, right? Mm-hmm. But I love that we're talking about helping women. I love that. I started this network to give women a platform. I didn't know it would turn into what it is today. I started a network because we are an anomaly. I'm a woman-owned broadcasting and television independent. I don't even say that. I don't even talk about it. But 10 years ago plus, even longer than that, women were trying to have a voice. And do you know, women left. Let's start with radio. Women left talk radio by the millions. And this independent, positive venue, this has brought them back. And I remember this. 20 years ago was my show, and I remember Rob and Brenda and Patricia. And there was a handful of us, and we were women. And the people that were out there to help us wouldn't help us because they told us we didn't stand a chance in hell of doing anything with independent voices. And what do you who is going to listen to women talk? And, you know, I'm so grateful that Benny and the network I'm on, they didn't believe that. These people here at this network, at my network and KKNW, these people are like, come on. Yes, AMFM, join us. So how do we help the women that may be listening that are thinking, I got myself a heavy load I'm lifting? The thing you said that I've had extremely great mentors. But you're creating a platform to help women. What is your vision for where you are today and what you want to see happen, Tiffany?
Ooh.
Yes.
My vision is large. What I want to see happen is for women, especially, to understand the value of where they are. Sure, life gets heavy. It does. It gets heavy for us all. But the power is inside of you. The weight is what's on the outside of you. So we have to let that sink in. What we put on is more stress. Oh, I've got to drive the kids to school. And then afterwards, I need to make sure I've made, you know, cupcakes. And then afterwards, I've got to go to work. Those things we pile on. But the power to get all those things done is inside. So on versus in. When you start to focus on the power that's inside of you, you can burst out of that shell. And that moves all those things not only away from you, but it puts them in their place so that now you can prioritize your life. But you can't do that while it's all hugging around you. You can't feel it. All you feel is the pressure. So getting people to focus inward and focus on the power that's inside is key to prioritizing your life and reigniting that light that I'm talking about.
Yeah. You know, you and I didn't even touch upon the fact that we're talking about women, but there's a whole nother layer when we're talking about diversity, equity, microaggression. I mean, there's a whole nother level of this that immediately excludes large amounts of women from the conversation at all. And that is really, for me, when I look at what you're doing, you're creating a women's movement. Doesn't matter, women. You're creating a movement, period, that opens up a door so people can have a conversation about, Tiffany, I don't know what I don't know. I have an idea. Can you help me with my idea? You know, and they're not going to get the answer I got 20 years ago. That idea really is stupid. You're never going to be able to create a positive talk radio network. You're just like, give it up now. And I was told that by an executive of a syndication company. But we have to have others that help us stay true to the course and believe in ourselves. How important is it for us to annihilate that imposter syndrome and replace it with faith and belief in ourselves?
It is the most important thing. And that's not just in business. That's just in life. We think we're imposters all the time. When you're nervous about showing up to a gathering, you know, and you're just pitter-patter of your heart before you walk in the door, the social anxiety that people talk about, but no one talks about, where's that come from? What are you anxious of? The people? Well, no, you know half the people. It couldn't be you're afraid of the people that you don't know because you haven't met them yet, right? Really, that is that's imposter syndrome. What are you going to talk about? How are they going to perceive me? Am I dressed right? Will I like the food? Is there going to be too much alcohol? There's 1,000 questions that can go through your head, and all those are you feeling that I just maybe won't fit into this. And I think it's important that we acknowledge that in order to be able to eradicate it within ourselves. We have to acknowledge that I may feel like I'm an imposter just by walking into the grocery store. Do I have enough money to get that or whatever? And have to recognize that even in those small moments, that doubt is what's screaming. And you will take that doubt with you to the next thing and then on to the next thing. And it just starts to compile itself and it becomes this huge ball of negativity. And you have to fight through that negativity in order to make room for something positive to come into your life.
Yeah. I mean, I thought in my life I'd seen a lot of things, but you know what I've seen in the past 5 years has shocked me. I play a sport. It's called table tennis. I play with people, like, just to be clear, I'm probably the minority in the group in terms of the color of my skin, just right? And I have never seen such harassment against Asian people in my community here, which is so protective. I mean, walking out of the street after playing, and I'm thinking we are going to get beat up here because somebody looks Asian. And I'm like, what? Like, why? Like, some rumor about COVID. And I thought to myself, this is a whole new world, and we have to have a brighter light than we've ever had. Don't you think?
100%. Over the last 5 or so years, there's been such a huge shift in judgment. People are very, very quick to judge. I'm not going to say that this racist activity came out of nowhere.
It's been
a part of us in America. It's been a part of us for a long time. But people acting the way that they do, the judgment, the forceful behavior, the online bullying and things like that. You mentioned earlier, you know, that you came before the Twitter. So did I. I think I don't let the mohawk fool you. I'm older than I was. I remember.
I know, right?
When things were more simple. And we didn't have all these gadgets and places to go to vent online and find groups of people who felt the same way as us. And I think that that's emboldened the position of hate by being able to find collective hate groups in these areas to be social and really just kind of go, yeah, that is the right way when it's really the wrong path. And so for the last 5 or so years, you just, it's been toiling and it's been really boiling. And we're at this head of, what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Because you shouldn't have to feel that way just because there's Asians in your group or Blacks in your group or Hispanics in your group, that there is going to be some sort of incident. But that's where we are. We have to change who we are inside to move aside a lot of that judgment and realize that we're one being and that we have to focus on what's here and now if we want better.
You know, oh, now we have a few minutes left. There are some things I'm really get excited about. In the world that we're talking about, there's a guy out of Pennsylvania, right? I don't live there. I live here, but I'm from the East Coast. And I've been watching this man. His name is Fetterman. And he's running, right, in Pennsylvania. And he has been old school, grassroots. I'm going to walk down the street in my little shorts, and I am going to talk to people, and I'm going to go door to door. And he has an interesting T-shirts and stuff. This is a man you want to talk to. Legal weed for PA, homegrown for the holiday. I mean, this is a guy, if you look at him and you understand what he believes in, you'll see he's even got a rainbow heart thing with his name on it. This is what we're talking about. Now, I don't live in Pennsylvania, but I've been watching him, and I've been watching what he says, and I've been watching how absolutely angry people are at him, and I've been watching the integrity he has in holding his own. Now, everyone listening to this and everybody you touch and everybody I touch, they have the same integrity. We have to stop the noise and find the light that you talked about. Tiffany, I can't thank you enough for today. I want to take a minute, make sure everybody has your website, and then I want to hear your personal message. I would love to know, how do we engage with you? How do we join the movement? How do we work with you? How do people call you to ask you questions they don't even know to question? How do we do that? Let's give out that information first.
Awesome. Thank you so much, first of all, for having me on today. You can find out more about me, and you can end my programs from going to www.lccoachingsuccess.com. lccoachingsuccess.com. There you'll find all the programs that I offer, and you can even book a free 15-minute session with me where we can talk about what program's best for you, one-on-one mentoring, or maybe you need to visit my master class. Right now, the master class is being held online. We will, in the near future, be a live class in person, but right now we're online, so it's very easy for you to join in and get these lessons right from the comfort of your own home.
I can't thank you enough for joining us here today and for being that leadership we need in the world and your heart and your commitment to helping so many women out there that don't even know that there is help on the way. I would love to know your personal message, what you want to say to everybody listening today.
Certainly. I think my personal message to everyone is to be careful what you're listening to that's coming from yourself. Make sure that you are bathing yourself in positive messages that come from within and that you are gracious and within gratitude enough to give those messages to someone else so that they can get into their positivity as well.
You know, thank you so much for all that you do. Again, give out those websites one last time if you don't mind.
Certainly. LC Coaching Success. That's at www.lccoachingsuccess.com. And if you'd like to know more about women in the cannabis space, go to www.vanguardmediaonline.com.
And for those of you out there, yes, we are going to be doing a series this month on issues, not necessarily on this show, but definitely on the Power Up with Dr. Pat show. And I have a funny feeling we're going to be having Tiffany back joining us on some of that. Thank you, Tiffany, for everything you're doing. Thank you for being the strength for everyone. Thank you for being the mentor of mentors. Thank you for taking on the conversation most scared to death to talk about. Thank you for being you. Benny, you do it every time. Thank you for making everything go smoothly. Olivia, thank you for jumping in again. And Daniel, for you too. It takes a village for us to get this message out to 100 media outlets, and I am so honored I work with the best and the best. We'll see you all next time.